Great to be joined for another session of ECAC Hockey Decision Makers. One of my all-time favorites, Teddy Drury, out of Trumbull, Connecticut. Even though he was born in Boston, he's still a Connecticut guy. Teddy, great to visit with you.
Great to see you, Pierre.
How you feeling, by the way? You're the newest member of the Beanpot Hall of Fame.
It's special. I mean, you think of the history of that tournament and all the amazing players that have come through. You know, some of the best of the best, even at the top level, right? The guys that have come out of those schools. So yeah, it's a cool thing. It's fun, and what a special event. There's nothing at all like it. There's not anything in sports that matches, you know, four colleges that close together with all that history. It's really special.
Yeah, I loved going to watch. My son played in the Beanpot last year, and I just enjoyed that so much. For all the years I used to scout and go watch it, even when you were playing, it was kind of neat to watch it when one of your offspring is participating in it. I got to ask you right now, like your Harvard teams were always good. You had some really good players. What was the moment like your first Beanpot and when you went out there?
The first Beanpot was a real thrill, and there's so many unique things about it, and some of it was kind of sign of the times. But back then, for the Beanpot, Harvard, the players just met at the rink. So we would literally take the tee over to the game, which I think about that now. There's no way they would let them do that now. But then, you know, you go into the garden to play for the first time, and you know, I had been in there to see games, of course, but just it's such an honor and such a special thing. And then back then, too, it was such a unique thing how differently shaped the rink was, especially relative to the Harvard rink. So you'd spend kind of all warm-ups figuring that out, like, oh, you can't really take a wide turn in the corner, you'll hit the boards. But yeah, it's a special event and a real thrill the first time.
One of the reasons why I was so pumped to have you on, you're the perfect example of education meets athletics meets success. And just can you talk about that in your life, how that came upon you?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of built where I naturally want to do my best in whatever I'm doing, I think. I think I have a little bit of intellectual curiosity that goes along with that. But there was also kind of a message and a mindset of, you know, if you want to do the sports, the greats have to be there too. So, that was always a part of the equation. And, it worked out really well to get to play at a place like Harvard and, outside, everything outside of the hockey. And, you know, you go and you do that, you're 18 years old, you don't really know yet what you don't know. And at the time, what really attracted me to Harvard was the guys on the team. I really liked the guys on the team when I visited. And that, you know, I didn't have the right context to appreciate all the other stuff. You do now as you get older. And yeah, it was a great turn.
You're a two-time Olympian. I know about your first Olympics in 92 in Albertville. And I know a lot about your second Olympics in 94 in Lillehammer because I was working with you. Let's talk about Albertville. What was that like when you found out you made the team?
Yeah, that was amazing. It was, as you remember back then, we did pick a roster in the summer and we trained together and go on the road for 5 months. And it was an extended roster and there were still cuts that were happening along the way. And, I think, I don't know if I fully appreciated the time, but I was probably on the bubble. And I remember we were in Washington, D.C. It was our last exhibition game, and they made a couple cuts after that game, and I made it through. So that was just thrilling and such a treat and an honor. And there's nothing like getting to play for your country. It's unrivaled, and what a special feeling it is. So, yeah, very, very cool.
Have you watched a lot of Olympic games since then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you surprised that it's gone so well? I mean, the NHL players going there, it makes it a little bit different, but I think it's gone unbelievably well with all the NHL players there.
Yeah, I think there might have been like a small transition period of like, this is meant to be amateur, and it kind of wasn't, but it was meant to be that way. But then once you saw it the first time and it was best on best, I mean, that's just, you know, those are the best games that I remember from my childhood. It wasn't the Stanley Cup games. It was the Canada Cup games. It was, I mean, I can remember those games of Canada versus the Soviet Union. And I think it was either 87 or
87.
Yeah. 6-5, 6-5, 2-1. I remember the scores. I remember the players. Those games were the best. You get the tape of those and just watch them over and over. So seeing best on best, that's ideal, right? That's what you want to see. So it's good.
You talk about that. You played against a lot of those players not too long after that.
Yeah.
What was that like the first time you had to play against, let's say, Wayne Gretzky?
Yeah. I remember taking a face-off against Wayne Gretzky for the first time and, you know, shaking a little like, oh, my gosh, this is the real thing. And yeah, it's a leap. But, you know, once you get to know them and you're on a team with them and you're in a locker room with them, you appreciate their skill. But, you know, they're also just guys and hockey players and people you're accustomed to being around.
You know, they were elite players, but one of the things that I find really fascinating about all the Harvard guys from your generation, having the opportunity to play for Billy Cleary, who was one of the best American-born players ever and never had a chance to play in the NHL. What was it like to play for Coach Cleary at Harvard?
Billy, he coached a game that players wanted to play, right? It was very offensive. It was creativity. It was try to make a play. And it was a fun environment too. It was an upbeat, fun, positive environment, just the way Billy is, right? With a little bit of snarl sometimes too, I guess. But, yeah, he was a good coach to play for. And then he retired after my first year, and then playing for Ron Tomasoni, it was a lot of the same mindset.
Yeah, no, I've known Ronnie a long time. I used to recruit against him when I was up at St. Lawrence, and he was a real good hockey man and somebody who cared a lot. The Harvard tradition in the Olympics is fascinating, I find. How much was talked about being on an Olympic team when you're in the Harvard dressing room?
Yeah, it's definitely a focus. I mean, it gets highlighted inside the rink, and you know exactly who's done what, and you know, I had exposure to someone like Lane McDonald before going to Harvard, and hearing about his experience and in the 88 Olympics. So, yeah, it was always, you know, given starting with Billy, it was always part of the mentality of, I mean, even back then it was like almost even the more desired outcome than playing the NHL was if you got to play an Olympic team. That was probably the Harvard mindset at the time.
One of the things I found so cool about you is when we acquired you from Calgary to Hartford, part of why I wanted you there is because I had seen you play so much at Fairfield Prep and see you play in the World Junior. And so I knew your character and I knew your determination. But what I really liked was the fact that you left school after 3 years and you were still super motivated to get your degree. How hard was it to get your degree after you left school?
It was hard. It was 3 summers of doing summer school, and you're a little bit on an island. You know, in a normal school year, you're around your teammates, you've got friends, you're collaborating, you're helping each other. But you know, you're in summer school, you're by yourself. I didn't really know anyone, so you're kind of grunting through the work when the sun's shining outside. It's a pain in the neck. I have to say, I give my son credit. He did it as well, and he did it in even more difficult circumstances. Because of COVID, his junior year, the Ivy League shut down, didn't have sports. He went to Sweden, and Harvard had classes that year, if you remember, but they were online. And he did 2 semesters online from Sweden. He'd go play a game and then, you know, log in at 2 a.m. Sweden time and take an exam, things like that. So he fought through it too.
Well, here's what I know about your son, Jack, who you're talking about. I went to go give a speech in Waterloo when he was playing junior there. And I was talking to him after I gave the speech. And he said, "Mr. McGuire, I hate to do this. I got to get home and do homework." Okay, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Your wife, Liz, was a phenomenal lacrosse player at Harvard, and you guys have raised a magnificent family. How big a role did Liz play in all of this?
Oh, a huge role. She's, you know, starting with the genetics, she was a tremendous, tremendous athlete, and you know, did some great things. But, you know, she was and is just a great nurturer too, and, you know, always was there to support Jack and all the kids in whatever they wanted to do, and helping to kind of create the framework where, you know, go do your best. It's okay if you fail. Just keep pushing, keep doing your best. And she's an amazing mom.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I've enjoyed every time I've had a chance to visit with both of you. I got to ask you, for this Olympics, are you a little bit surprised at the roster, or do you like the Team USA roster? What's your take on it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was thinking of that a couple of days ago. I was watching an Avalanche game, and they popped up on the screen the leading U.S. goal scorers this season, and two of the top four were on the team.
Robertson and Caulfield, and I knew you would know that. We didn't know who it was, so I knew you would know that.
It definitely caught my eye. Look, I think they put together a team in the Four Nations that a bounce here or there. You know, they played it right to the end. They've got guys on the team that have in the past proven themselves offensively to be exceptional. So that's, you know, that's comforting. But yeah, it's to deviate from what the stats are telling you, you've got to have some confidence in your picks. And I think Billy does, and he certainly knows what he's doing. And yeah, it'll be fun to watch.
I can't wait to watch. I'm also doing it digitally for NBC. It's my eighth Olympics. I can't believe it. I'm getting old, Teddy.
Are you counting summer in there?
I'm counting two summers, yeah. There you go. You got me. Did you like the water polo that I did, Teddy?
Oh, it's terrific. Terrific. That's the hardest sport there is. Someone trying to drown you while you're holding a ball, that's tough.
I couldn't believe it. Dick Ebersol got me poolside and had me do it. And the first one I did was in London. The second one was in Rio. And I could not believe how savage it was. Yeah, when you got close to the game, it was unbelievable. It really was. Tough. You know what is really cool about you, too, is that when the NHL was over, you went and played in the American Hockey League for a little while. And then you went overseas to prolong your career, and you had a family.
Yeah.
What was that like, that experience of leaving North America? You got a young family, you got a pretty new wife, and you're over there and you're playing for money and you're trying to survive.
Yeah. You know, overall we enjoyed it. We were going to go for a year or maybe two tops, and we stayed for five. So we enjoyed it. There are definitely challenges with having a young family in a different country and working through those. But there were a lot of benefits too. I mean, Jack, he was there from ages 2 to 7. When we left, he spoke German like a native. You would never have known he was. Now he's lost it, unfortunately. But at the time, it was, you know, it was great. And the travel we got to do, the places we got to show them, That was all really good. It was fun for him to be in that environment too. He was around there, and it's a much different environment there in Europe, where the families are around the teams a lot. There's more downtime, and so he was exposed to a lot of that and really enjoyed it.
One of the things that I always felt about, and I want to be transparent with our audience, I was fortunate enough to have Teddy in Hartford and also in Ottawa, and I had a big voice in getting him to those places. And part of why I did that, Teddy, and I never shared this with you, I always thought you were a guy that could create a positive culture, a positive environment around the room. Where did that come from in your life? How did that establish itself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it just kind of comes to me. I think when I was young, even just I think about with my brother, my brother Chris, who in this world everyone knows, it was always like encouraging, and hey, you know, I don't care if you're 2 years younger, you play with us in this group, or, you know, trying to facilitate that. And I think that's how I think about leadership, is let's create a good atmosphere and let's be positive and help everyone to do their best as much as you can. And that's kind of how I think of it.
You never disappointed me. You blew me away with your leadership qualities. I was so proud of you all the time. So Chris, his brother, runs the New York Rangers, played in the Olympics, and won the Little League World Series. When you saw your brother's picture on Sports Illustrated when he was pitching for Trumbull, what was that like in the family house?
The whole thing was surreal. It was absolutely bizarre. I couldn't be in Williamsport. I was in Lake Placid at the time. It was a 17U team, and we were playing against the team that came in from the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And we had like a little 3-game series. So I watched the game on TV, and it was miraculous they won. It was an enormous upset. And I remember flying home and driving into Trumbull, and there were people lining the streets. There were signs everywhere, and there was a huge parade. And the tour they got to have those next 3 months was just bizarre. I mean, he was a month later, he's on the field with Don Mattingly playing catch and Ricky Henderson. And then he, you know, they're on Good Morning America. Then they're seeing the president. And it was just remarkable. It was really embraced by the country and by Trumbull, and really special time.
Played in Calgary, which is, I thought at the time, Calgary was a hot hockey market, as you know. And they had just come off the 1989 Stanley Cup. What was that like being an American from Harvard playing in Calgary?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's there's challenges, like, you know, being that far from what you kind of know your first year. It was a really veteran team, and a lot of good people on that team. And but it was a veteran team that kind of had their ways of doing things. And it was a really good team. There were a lot of really good players on that team. Guys that went on and did things before and after that were really big in the game. So that part of it was great. Getting exposure, being around players like Joe Noondijk. He was just a tremendous player and a great person too. So it was a big jump, I would say that.
So when you're a Harvard guy and you walk into the Calgary Flames dressing room and there's Joe Noondijk and he's a Cornellian, does he give it to you?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You definitely get it. I don't know if it's still the same way now, but less from the other college guys, but any junior guy, once, you know, they see you're from Harvard, you just never hear the end of it. You just get crushed every day.
Oh, that's so good. That's great. I'm curious as to now, when you think about it, Jack went to Harvard. You know, your wife Liz went to Harvard. You went to Harvard. Your other boys didn't go to Harvard, I don't believe.
No. So none of my other boys.
Did I get that wrong?
No, you're right. None of them are in college yet. My daughter went to BU, actually, and she's out of school. I have a son, Owen, who's in junior right now, and he's going to Stonehill next year.
Okay.
He committed to Stonehill about 2 months ago, which we're really excited for him. It really seems like they're building something really strong there. They've got great coaching, and so we're excited about that. Another boy who is a senior at St. Mark's outside of Boston.
Southborough.
Southborough, playing for Carl Corzini and having a really good experience there. They have a very good team. I have one who's a freshman in high school who's still at home, plays for the Mission hockey program, which you've probably heard of over the years.
That's like mid-Fairfield. That's like the
Evil
Empire of the Midwest. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Don't worry.
So we'll see. We'll see what path they want to take. But, for us, it kind of just happened organically that Jack went there. It was never a goal or a push, or it just worked out that way.
I think that's so refreshing to hear you talk that way. Because a lot of parents would say, nope, this is where we went. This is where Jack went. You're going to go there. And the last time I saw Owen, you and I were talking in a parking lot in Pickering, Ontario, during a youth hockey tournament. My guy Ryan was a little older. Owen was a little younger. And so that's, and it was cold that night too. Holy, it was cold in that parking
lot. Sure was. It sure was.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I'll never forget that night. And I was like, I saw one play the next day. He did really well. What's up for you? I know you're working for O'Connor in Chicago. Why don't you tell the people how you're utilizing your Harvard education with O'Connor?
Yeah. O'Connor's the hedge fund that has been inside of UBS for a long time, but actually – right now, we were acquired by Cantor Fitzgerald. So we're in the process of transitioning to Cantor. And I manage trading for O'Connor, and I co-manage our equity capital markets effort, which is IPOs and secondary transactions.
You travel a lot, don't you?
Yeah, not as much as you have in your life. But yeah, I'm in London, back in New York pretty frequently, and then spotty at conferences and hopefully at warm places the other times.
How much did your time in the ECAC help you with your post-hockey life, Ted?
Oh, it definitely helped. It definitely helped because once I decided that this was the path I wanted to go down, there was an instant network and the people that I could get opinions on from, get introductions, you know, to other people. And yeah, it was really impactful. Yeah.
Well, I know one thing, that you've been unbelievable in your life and in your career post hockey. And I wonder what advice you give to Jack as he's playing for Colorado and what the long-term endeavor is for somebody like that.
Yeah. It's funny. My father-in-law is my wife has 9 siblings. She's one of 10. And my father-in-law is desperate that someone in the family becomes a doctor. So he always pushes someone becomes a doctor. And he's focusing on Owen right now. He wants Owen to become a doctor. But no, I try to stay hands off as far as where Jack takes his life after he's done with hockey. He'll cross that bridge when he gets to it. I was going to say fortunate, but he was smart to finish and get his degree. And that gives him some optionality when he gets there. But, you know, the way he thinks, and I think it's smart, is just trying to stay in the moment and enjoy what he's doing now.
Was he shocked when he got traded by Carolina to Colorado?
Yeah, I think he was surprised. I think when it's your first time, there's always a surprise. And then just the circumstances of the trade, it was a pretty seismic trade, right? It wasn't like your run of the mill trade. So just the circumstances around it. And it was, as you know, in hockey, it was a whirlwind where it happened on a Friday night. He was in Long Island. Colorado was playing Boston the next day at noon in Boston. And that next morning at 6 a.m., he was on a plane with Marty Natchez up to Boston. He played that, you know, less than 12 hours later, he was playing for another team. So it was a immediate shift and pivot. And it was shocking, but I think he embraced it too.
How did Dad help him get through that?
You know, it was a lot of the same of like, this is, you know, just stay present, stay in the moment. And you know, the sports world, there's a lot of things uncontrollable. You know this better than anyone. And kind of letting those go and focusing on what you can is imperative. And, you know, he relied on that during that kind of tumultuous time.
I've never had a chance to tell Liz this, so hopefully she'll have a chance to see this at some point. I really felt bad when we brought you from Calgary to Hartford. And then I felt really bad when I brought you from Hartford to Ottawa. and I just so she understands, that's the ultimate sign of respect I can have for somebody. When I've actually been to two different cities and I brought their husband to two different places because of the respect I have for him.
I appreciate that. And look, you embrace the different things that come at you in life. And it was great to get to be with you. I put it that way.
Well, we had a lot of fun, Teddy. Thank you. Give my best to Liz. I look forward to seeing Jack along the way and Owen and everybody else in the Drury family. You have been a phenomenal ambassador for the sport. Harvard should be so proud of you and what you've done, not just with hockey, but your post-hockey career. Thank you so much, Ted.
Thanks, Pierre. As always, a real treat to talk with you. It warms my heart, puts a smile on my face when I'm with you. So be well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, my friend. You've been listening to another edition of ECAC Hockey Decision Makers. Teddy Drury, a true champion.
The ECAC Hockey Championship returns to Lake Placid, New York this March. Witness the first ever ECAC Hockey Women's Championship in Lake Placid on March 6th and 7th, and the Men's Championship on March 20th and 21st. It happens at the legendary Herb Brooks Arena, the home of miracles.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Don't miss the battle for the 2026 title and an NCAA bid. Tickets are on sale now at LakePlacidOlympicCenter.com. ECAC Hockey, the educated decision.